afternoon. We'll call the February 18th, 2014 Sussex County Council meeting to order. First thing will be approval of the agenda. Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Council. At this time, I have no suggested amendments to the agenda.
Entertained motion to approve the agenda as printed.
You got it.
Second. Motion, Mr. Wilson. Second, Mrs. Deaver. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Well, yes, motion carried. We had minutes of February 11th. Any corrections or changes or concerns of those?
Look good.
Hearing none, they'll stand approved. Correspondence, Mr. Moore?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. There's one letter from Read Aloud, Delaware, and it had a special note added to the bottom. Once again, you very kind folks have contributed critical funds for us. We will utilize every dollar to help children in Sussex County and their parents. Thanks.
Any correspondence from Council? Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. First item of business is the Board of Assessment Review appointments. As you know, the Board of Assessment Review meets the first 15 working days of March each year to consider property assessment appeals. Appointments to the board are made by the council and run for a term of 5 years. Councilman Wilson's current appointment is Mr. Lester Beachy, and his term expires this month. Mr. Beachy has agreed to serve another 5 years. Councilman Cole's current appointment of Mr. Ron Patterson has asked to no longer serve. Mr. Cole would like to appoint Mr. Harry Krieger to serve the balance of the term. To serve the balance of the term, which expires in February 2017. Unless there are any questions, I have a motion for your consideration. Be it moved, the Sussex County Council approves the appointment of Mr. Lester Beachy to the Sussex County Board of Assessment Review effective February 1, 2014, for a term of 5 years, and the appointment of Mr. Harry Krieger to the Sussex County Board of Assessment Review effective February 1, 2014, for the balance of District 4's term, which is February 2017.
Entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Cole. Second, Mrs. Deaver. Any questions? We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
Well, yes, motion carried. Mr. Lawson?
Thank you. County Administrator's Report for February 18th, 2014. The Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control will host a two-hour workshop on the Biggert Waters Flood Insurance Reform Act of 2012, commonly known as BW-12, on Friday, February 21st, from 9:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. at the Cheer Center here in Georgetown. The workshop is designed to educate floodplain management officials and insurance agents who write flood insurance policies in Delaware. Richard Sabata, insurance specialist with FEMA Region 3, will conduct the training and explain the changes to BW-12, the changes that BW-12 is bringing to the National Flood Insurance Program and premium costs. Anyone interested in attending the workshop should register with Greg Williams, Denerec's environmental scientist, by calling him at 302-739-9921 or emailing Greg at gregory.williams@state.de.us. Mm-hmm. Finally, as noted in last week's report, Mr. Charles Spicer, county pensioner, passed away on February 8th. Mr. Spicer served as clerk of the peace from January 1987 through 94 and sheriff from January 1995 until his retirement in 99. Services for Mr. Spicer will be held on Wednesday, February 19th at Melson Funeral Home, 38040 Muddy Neck Road, Ocean View, where the family will receive friends after 11, and the funeral service will begin at 12. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests donations be made in Mr. Spicer's memory to the American Heart Association, 200 Continental Drive, Suite 101, Newark, Delaware, 19713, or the charity of your choice. Thank you, Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Question. I would love to go to that workshop, but I had something on the 21st. Did they just tell us recently about that, or had that been in the works earlier?
The Seems department...
Like, they don't give us much time.
The department contacted Sussex County last week, in between last Tuesday and this Tuesday, because we put it in this week's administrative
Report. Yeah, I'm sure
report.
That was fine. Hard to get it all done.
Mr. Godwin, legislative and committee action update.
Mr. President, members of council, I'll have two issues to go over with you at this point. The first is we'll review our current legislative update As you know, the legislature is out of session from now until March 17. So there hasn't been any action since they went out of session the end of last month. But I do have one thing to update you on, and we'll turn to page, I think it's page 10 of my report. One bill that we discussed at length, House Bill 167, concerns private employers and their ability to check criminal backgrounds on applicants for work. You had asked me to pursue amendments to this bill that would remove the 5- and 10-year waiting period so that we could have the opportunity to check the backgrounds on certain individuals. What I didn't know when I was standing in front of you on the 4th of February was that those amendments had already been adopted and added to the bill. The reason I didn't know it was because that morning I pulled all the bills up on the computer and they hadn't changed that bill yet to reflect the amendments that had been added to it just a few days before. So I apologize for being out of step with that. However, I believe I have attached a copy of the bill. Now, in the General Assembly, a bill could be amended in one chamber and not the other yet because it hasn't gotten to that chamber yet. If a bill is amended, they'll add the amendment to it and send the bill next door. They don't necessarily rewrite the bill's content until it gets through both chambers. So since the bill hadn't been through the Senate yet, I missed the changes. I saw the amendments, but I didn't see a change in the bill. So I asked Kelly Collins, our secretary, to take the original bill and change it as per these amendments that were adopted with it in the House. So I believe the bill, if you'll read it, it's attached in your package. It's titled Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 167. I think that bill is probably now okay with what you had told me 2 weeks ago, and that was that we wanted the ability to be able to investigate applicants' backgrounds, particularly after their first interview, if we were about to make a job offer. And we objected to the 10-year waiting period on felonies and 5-year waiting period on misdemeanors, which was a time limitation as to how far back you could consider them. So if you read the bill, I think, and we have some time on this yet, I think we now have a bill that pretty much aligns with what you'd asked for. So I'll point that out to you. In the report also.
Excuse me, Hal.
Yes, sir.
I guess it would be appropriate for you or someone to check with Karen Brewington to see if it meets her standards. Have you done that yet?
I have not. She was standing here when you made the request, is why I haven't talked with her yet, but I'll do that for sure.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Did Brooks say something to him about it? Say something about this bill?
I didn't get any communication from him about that.
I talked to Brooks, and he's on that committee. He said he didn't like it either. So
right.
That's Kent County. So
right, right.
I figure if we get these other counties aligned with us.
Well, since the bill has been amended, now it's been amended in the House. When it goes over to the Senate, it'll be voted on in that new form. So we'll at least have those objectional portions removed that you had mentioned on the 4th of February.
Yeah, okay.
Okay? So even if it passes, I think we've had some of your concerns addressed. But I will check with Mrs. Brewington. Thank you. At the bottom of page 10, there's a bill there, House Bill 243. I showed this one to you 2 weeks ago and just asked for your thoughts. I didn't really get any direction from you. This concerns JP Court jurisdiction over agricultural land leases. I don't know if you want to even make a comment on it. It might not be something you're interested in. But in the past, while domestic and commercial leases, if there's a problem with the possession of the property, that problem is adjudicated in the Justice of the Peace Court. But farm agricultural leases seem to have no jurisdiction in the court system to settle differences. This bill will put them in the same JP Court system as is residential leases and commercial leases. So I think it's a housekeeping issue. But since it has something to do with agricultural land, I thought you might want to at least review it.
I think what really brought this deal to head was down here at the farm. What was the guy's name? I said down here in Rehoboth. And the state had bought the land, but he had bought equipment and planned on farming this year, and they just leased it right up underneath of him and didn't follow the lease. And actually the state is more at fault than probably anyone else in this.
I was aware.
So I think that's what brought this.
Thanks.
Brought this to head.
Well, if you want to give me some direction on it, I just need to have
I
some.
I don't think it's probably a good idea.
Okay.
We need to.
Okay.
Need to stay in good.
I think they're doing the same matter to anything else. An aircraft lease versus a
Correct.
Separate thing for that.
This includes ag leases into all other
And
well.
Usually most farmers shake a hand or something, they stand true to their word. I don't understand why the state has a problem doing this. That's my problem.
On the next page, page 11, there are two bills there that I'm bringing to your attention as relatively new legislation. Senate Bill 160, while it's a transportation bill, it relates to trucks and weights. It has to do with agriculture again, so I thought you might want to make a comment on it. And what the bill does essentially is it adjusts the weight limit for a truck that's carrying live poultry.
Right.
And the reason it does that, they're offering a 3% variation on the weight limit. The weight limit is 90,000 pounds. But when you're catching chickens in a chicken house and you empty the house and put them on the truck, if the farmer had a good season with those chickens, they might be a little heavier than the ones he had before. And the same number of chickens might weigh a few more pounds. So they're trying, the Department of Transportation is trying to give these agricultural live haul trucks a variance of 3%, which would allow their weight to go up to 92,700, provided all other safety features on the truck are up to spec. So they're not trying to cause a safety problem on the highways. They're simply trying to give the ag haulers a little room for variation of the weight of the live chickens. I didn't know if you wanted to make a comment on that or not, but I brought it to your attention because it is an ag bill. Finally, Senate Bill 166 has to do with land use and the environment. I wanted to bring that one to your attention also. This bill defines industrial landfill in conformity with the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control's regulations governing solid waste. This bill also establishes a height restriction, which I know is a current issue, or vertical limit for the industrial landfill at 130 feet above the mean sea level of the area. So it puts a cap on how high the industrial landfill can be, and it also makes it conform to other regulations that are governed by DENREC in the solid waste parts of their regulations. So I wanted to point that one out to you. You have a copy of that bill in the package as well, and see if you have any reason to comment on that. I wasn't sure, but I thought I'd bring it to your attention.
So what would it be at this time?
Excuse me?
Is there a height limit now? What is it now?
I don't think there is a height limit.
I don't think so. No.
There's one landfill in Newcastle County that seems to be going up every year. So I don't think there's a statewide lid on that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, that landfill wouldn't be as high as it is. But anyway,
they're trying to pass a law that landfill only can be so high. Is that correct?
Yes, 130 feet.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. This change would be for industrial landfills.
Well, what's considered industrial? Where they have their own landfill, that's all? Only that company can put in there?
Yeah, I'm not sure what classifies the industrial landfill different. It just says this bill defines industrial landfill, the term, in conformity with the Department of Natural Resources controls on governing solid waste. So apparently this industrial landfill would be in relation to a site that's taking waste that's supposed to be buried for eternity. If you read the bill, it mentions something about the definition. Industrial landfill means a land site at which industrial waste is deposited on or into the land as fill for the purpose of permanent disposal, except that it will not include any facility that has been approved for the disposal of hazardous waste under the Delaware regulations governing hazardous wastes. So it's intended to be a landfill that's going to be a permanent facility with industrial wastes.
Well, that's true in almost all landfills in hell. I mean, take this out of hard scrapple. That thing is what, 300 or 400 feet high, or way, I don't know, it's way up there.
Well, there are
it's an industrial landfill. I don't see 2 cents difference, except one owns privately owned and the other might maybe public owned. And since we don't own it, it's privately owned in a sense because you pay to go in and whatever, wherever you haul in and come out, you pay. So it's really, in a sense, privately owned. It may be owned by these folks up there on the head of the bridge. What do they call them? Bay Authority?
Mm-hmm.
It might be owned by them, but it's still a private landfill in a sense because you'll pay if you go in, I'll guarantee you.
This is why I wanted to bring it to your attention so we could discuss it and ask you to study it.
Think about
to give me some direction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. My second issue for discussion this morning is a report about the Wetlands Advisory Committee. You know I was your designee, and I've served on all of the committee meetings. Our first meeting was in September. We've met monthly, which means we've had 6 meetings. There's another meeting coming up in March, of which I need to prepare for with your opinion. I'm not prepared to give you that question that I need answered yet because I just got it 20 minutes ago, quite frankly. At our last meeting, which was the 11th last Tuesday, that's why I wasn't in attendance here, our committee chair, Mr. Michael Parkowski, posed a question verbally to us. It seemed rather complex and seemed like it had about three layers to me. I asked Chairman Parkowski if he would put that question in writing so I could give it to you verbatim. I just got that 20 minutes ago. I've been calling his office, and I have the question, but it is very complicated, and the information I need to back it up so you'll have the same information I've seen needs to be correlated with the degrees of the question. And by the way, I thought this question was complex. He's cut it into two pieces. I thought it was going to need three, but at least he's separated some of the thoughts. What I can tell you are some of the things we have done so far on this committee. We have structured the committee with 28 members, and we have decided, by the way, all the votes that were taken on this committee so far have been unanimous. So the committee has agreed unanimously to form these structures. The first one is that we have a 28-member board committee, and we require a two-thirds majority to adopt any actions, which is 19 votes. Thirdly, we have agreed on certain basic features of a wetland. We've agreed that wetlands are lands that are defined by the hydrology of the soil, standing water, and vegetation. We've also we've seen many slides and been educated pretty thoroughly on wetlands over the last few months. And some of the things that we've learned are that there are 30,000 acres of wetland in Delaware. Now, these are all types of wetlands. But the only thing that this committee is working on is non-tidal or freshwater wetlands. 47% of the wetlands in Delaware are in Sussex County. And that comes out to 14,100 acres. Of that 14,000, 12,000 of those acres are forested, to mean that you'll find these wetlands back in a forest on lands that probably aren't being used for anything other than the life of the forest. Currently, our tidal wetlands are regulated by DENREC in Delaware, and our non-tidal wetlands are regulated by the Army Corps of Engineers. Now, there are some derivatives and some variations to that, but basically that's the structure for the two different kinds of wetlands. Floodplain also is regulated by FEMA. So that kind of gives you some structure. I do have a lot of information to share with you, and I would propose that I make a presentation to you next week, including this detailed question, and give you enough of the information that I have gathered over the last 6 months that you'll be able to discern some direction for me as I cast my vote, or our vote, in March.
So if you have a title to wetlands in this state, in this county, and you think you own it, you're nuts.
No, you probably do. If you have title for the property, whether it's a wetland or not, it's still your property.
Wetlands. You're reading our wetlands. You just got done naming who had control over a bit of it. You named three or four different people about
who has legal jurisdiction.
If they got jurisdiction, brother, you don't really own it. You think you do. You might have the title, but they're telling you what you can do with it and can't do with it. And I'm telling you, when they get to that point, you just smiles off. You won't move a tree or anything in that piece of wetlands. It's kiss to try to get it done. And you don't own it when you come to that point.
We discussed this issue on the 24th of January, and I gave you this little magazine booklet. Mm-hmm. I've read through this, and this is really comprehensive. If you don't know anything about wetlands in general, this little publication does offer me, anyway, an education on what is a wetland and some of the features that you'll find in wetlands. And there are really four categories of non-tidal wetlands. And this booklet helps to explain that to you. I apologize for not having the information in a timely enough fashion, but Mr. Parkowski said to extend his apologies as well, but I plan to have a presentation for you very soon, possibly next week, so that you can give me some direction.
Do you have any idea what the options will be?
Well,
that's a good question.
What I can give you a sketch of is what I've learned so far, and this is all verbal, so I'm not reading to you from the context of the question. As I said, non-tidal wetlands are under the Army Corps of Engineers jurisdiction in Delaware. So if you want to do something on a wetland that you own, you need to get a permit from them. One of the discussions, is whether or not to give that authority to DENREC and let DENREC manage with the same jurisdiction. In other words, they would assume jurisdiction from the Army Corps and be able to embellish those details somewhat as they see fit. That's one part of the things that are discussed. And then there's been a lot of discussion about how wetlands are currently used by landowners who own them. There have been a lot of discussions about do we regulate these at all, or do we offer the owners some incentive? And if we offer them incentive to preserve the wetlands, how do we do that? There's been a number of questions circulating, of which I have a lot of that in the package, but I really would like to put that surrounding the formal question so that when you get the question, it'll be as the chairman of the committee has portrayed the question.
Well, with what you just said, it's been the tradition of this government to look for incentives as opposed to regulations, first and foremost. Would you agree that that's...
I would agree that's been your philosophy that I've seen, yes. I haven't made very many comments at this committee meeting, but I have made them aware that generally Sussex County Council likes to represent the interests of private property owners as a primary feature of how we govern land use. So I just made that comment.
I look forward to your presentation.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Lawson.
I just wanted to remind Council that next week will be our last meeting before our two-week break. And the next meeting for the committee, if it stands, is scheduled on the Wednesday, the 12th, which basically means we're going to have to convey information to you via email or hard mail between now and next Tuesday to give you the opportunity to review it, and then Hal make his presentation and get direction from you next week, because we won't meet after. And whoever is present at that March 12th meeting will be expected to vote on behalf of this county council, and by next Tuesday we will need to know your positions on the information presented.
But I mean, with respect to that one point, I mean, I'd be prepared now to make a motion that we direct Mr. Godwin to always look for an incentive-based approach as opposed to a regulatory approach.
I haven't had a chance to say anything.
Sure.
Before that, Mrs. DeVray, her question first.
I just wanted an opportunity to have some time to say something. One of my concerns is that folks, when they buy land, it might have wetlands on it. Is your committee talking about the responsibility of telling them that certain areas are wetlands?
Sort of a buyer disclosure.
Are they dealing with that?
I'm not sure. This committee has not discussed that.
Okay.
I do think that that's a feature that you'll find in realtors' service as they're transferring property. It's generally required to disclose the features of property that you're selling to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
If a property comes to our planning department for approval or for some sort of development, they then become aware of any wetlands by requiring it to be delineated on any plans that come in for the planning department's mm-hmm. consideration.
Mm-hmm. But before they buy it, we go by what the realtor's rules
are. Yeah, I don't know of a disclosure law. Mr. Everett, are you aware of such a...
There is a disclosure that goes with the real estate contracts,
mm-hmm.
and, they could rely on that, but that's the only thing I'm aware of.
But there are sufficient maps all over the place, right, Lawrence, that you have in your office and that show wetlands or indicate that the potential wetlands there, and if it's easy for people to research this issue, I think. To get it pinpointed, you have to get it delineated by a professional.
Well, the only way you can pinpoint is have a soil scientist that specializes in wetlands to establish a boundary, and then the surveyor goes in and establishes those points based
right.
on what the soil scientist or the
but as a potential, if the fear of the buyer, if somebody's buying some land, there are maps that are available that indicate where wetlands are from
there,
these maps.
And
then
we don't maintain wetlands maps per se. We have sets of the USGS maps. We used to have sets of the state wetlands maps, but they changed because it's site specific.
Okay.
And we got to that point where we were almost given false information based on maps that are
okay.
of age.
Yeah, and part, oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, no.
No, part of the issue is there can be wetlands on private property that you're unaware of. Like if a farmer, some of the issues out there, if a farmer scoops out a low area to kind of collect water on their property, then that may become wetlands, self-created without that being the intent.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of the issues on farm properties concerning wetlands,
right,
that people that own the property did not necessarily consider it wetlands, even though it got wet from time to time.
Right.
Because most people think, you know, the wetlands near a marsh or near waterways, as opposed to out in the middle of a field or in the middle of someone's woods.
Right.
So that's part of the issue that's being discussed with this committee.
But also, Everett, the Army Corps of Engineers operates under the guidelines of, I guess, what, the Clean Water Act or something. And right now, I think what it seems to me like it's going to be, do you want the regulatory agency to be in Dover or in Philadelphia? Right now, you have to go to Philadelphia to the Army Corps of Engineers to get information. And I think this is, the state is talking about, should we be regulating them at the state level? So it brings it closer to Georgetown if you have to go to Dover to make these decisions and find out what's going on. So I don't see any change on wetlands and the benefits of wetlands and how they regulate wetlands. It's just, do we go to Dover or do you go to Washington? I mean, or Philadelphia? I think that's where the Army Corps office is right now.
That seems to be the first half of these questions.
Mm-hmm.
And the second half is, how do you want to preserve these wetlands? Do you want to do it by regulation through law, or do you want to do it through incentive for the property owner?
Mm-hmm.
But
so that's
still,
kind of
the basic, I mean, I don't think the Army Corps of Engineers are going to change their, you know, their...
No, they will still have the same requirements as they do countrywide, all over the nation.
Right.
But the question is, do you want DENREC to assume that authority and then do the inspections and the permits in-house? And there's discussion about them expanding some of those requirements as well.
There's one thought there. Is the Army Corps of Engineers, are they harder to meet these regulations, or is DENREC harder
to
meet?
Well, that's a good question.
And until we know that, it's not really a fair judgment here that we can vote on. I don't think we can.
I agree.
Today.
I agree.
Sometimes it's just the individual you got to deal with at each of these agencies.
That's true, George. Sometimes them guys can be tougher. We don't know.
Well, we're saying the same regulations. Which one would we want?
Actually, if the same, we'd come,
if they're
we'd
the
come
same.
Back to Dover.
Right.
I mean, but we don't know that.
Well that's the possession. That's what we're looking at.
There has been some testimony that I've heard from people who own property with wetlands who've gone through the permit process with the Army Corps, and they were not dissatisfied with that process.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt that it was handled in a relatively efficient fashion and done in a timely manner. So we didn't hear complaints about the Army Corps taking forever to get it done. We didn't hear those kind of complaints. As a matter of fact, many of the complaints were supportive of the Army Corps' service so far.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So again, I just...
It might be worse.
Is there a list of... when you go to buy a piece of property... The realtor has to disclose, and George could tell us,
any
has
defects.
To disclose certain items, and it will be listed there. There won't be anything on these contracts about wetlands. I imagine that's not something that's singled out at this time.
Councilman Cole, correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't you required to disclose defects in residential
property? Not the realtors, property owners.
Right.
It's not
right.
The realtors. The property owners have to disclose all these issues, and then on that disclosure form is, are you aware of any wetlands?
Right.
You check off
okay.
Yes or no.
So it is there, wetlands. The question's there.
Right.
Okay, that's very
now
important.
Now, you might want to do due diligence and say, you know, that looks awful wet there, even though the guy said it wasn't there. I might get it checked out anyway, and you put that in your contract just to protect yourself.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But it's not the realtor doing all this. It's the property owner's responsibility to do it.
Well, either way, I mean, it's...
Realtors are good guys.
Yeah.
They all wear white hats. They
yeah, I know
they don't
that.
Do anything wrong.
I know.
Okay, moving right along.
Gotcha.
As far as I know.
Okay.
They take ethics courses.
Mm-hmm.
They're very ethical.
Okay, I think Mr. Phillips has some motion you want to make.
I think I did, Mr. Wilson, second. It's just that we direct Mr. Godwin to put forth a position that takes an incentive-based approach toward the goals of this committee as opposed to a regulatory approach.
Okay.
Always keep
and I'll try to get I'll try to have a more formal
we have question. A second on the motion. Have a second, Mr. Wills. Now the questions on the motion.
It just seems harmless. I guess it's going to be a lot of discussion going on if this is just one little part of it is
sure.
Basically sounds like to the yeah,
we will I'm sorry, Mr. Deaver.
How can you preserve anything if you're going to leave it up to what do you mean by incentives? I mean, how, what do you give and take, you know?
There have been a list of incentives discussed.
Okay, I haven't seen that.
And that's why I wanted to have time to make a formal presentation and give you all this information so you have time to read it and digest it.
We'll still end up looking at the total package and have to make a decision
right,
on that. This
sure.
is just something,
it's
I guess.
It's one piece of it.
Mr. Phillips wants to give some guidance to somebody.
We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deamer.
It's worth.
No, I don't. I think it's a way to try to evade what needs to be done. No.
Mr. Cole,
it's fine with me.
Mr. Phillips,
yes.
Mr. Wilson,
yes.
I will. Yes, motion carried. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
And you will get that.
Yes, I'm going to get that to you ASAP.
So we have a chance to look at
like
it,
I
review
said, I just,
it, and talk
yes.
about it next Tuesday.
Yes, sir.
It just depends on what the incentive is.
Thank you very much.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Thank you.
We will now move to our, we'll move down the agenda to our 1:30 public hearing. As posted, Mr. Moore, if you would read your instructions and whatever you give.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. The rules of procedure for County Council zoning hearings. When council holds public hearings on zoning applications, they are legislative hearings because council uses the information obtained during the hearings to decide whether to adopt an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map in the manner requested by the applicant. Each application shall be announced. The director will review with council the minutes and testimony from the P&Z hearing, and those minutes will be made part of the record along with any exhibits introduced at the planning zoning hearing and any recommendation made by the commission. The applicant will be called on to present and explain their application and present reasons supporting their application. Council may question the applicant and their witnesses. After the applicant has presented their application, council will provide an opportunity for anyone else who favors the application to speak. After that, any persons who oppose or question the application will be allowed to state the reasons for their opposition or questions. After that, there will be no rebuttal by the applicant and the hearing will be closed unless council decides to leave the record open for a specific purpose and time period. Further, the applicant will not be allowed to question persons who speak in opposition, and persons who speak in opposition will not be allowed to question the applicant or their witnesses. If you intend to speak, you are required to come to the front and stand at the speaker stand and state your name and home address before you make a statement. Please sign that, there's a list at the podium, please sign. If you represent or speak for a group or organization, please identify who you represent. When you make your statement, please be concise. Do not repeat yourself. If you have a written statement, hand it to Mr. Abbott, and it will become part of the record. If there is more than one witness for the applicant or more than one person in opposition, please do not repeat points that a prior speaker has already stated. All persons in attendance should conduct themselves in orderly fashion. No applause or other disruptive behavior is permitted. If you have a cell phone, pager, beeper, or other telephonic device with you, please take the time now to turn it off or switch it to silent service. At the conclusion of the hearing on each application, council may either approve it, deny it, or defer it to a later date. If the Planning and Zoning Commission deferred action, council will do likewise. And we have the one hearing this afternoon, and it's change of zone number 1741, filed on behalf of Bay Forest Club, LLC. Mr. Abbott.
Good afternoon. The Planning Commission held their public hearing on January 23rd of this year. This is an application of Bay Forest Club, LLC, to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agricultural residential district to a MRRPC, medium density residential district residential plan community for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, containing 30.695 acres more or less, land lying east of Wakes Neck Road, one half of a mile north of Old Mill Road, and the site's identified as tax map District 134, map 8, parcel 17, 17.02, and 18. I've provided each of you a copy of the site plan that was submitted with the application. The file contains a copy of that site plan, a copy of an environmental assessment and public facility evaluation report, a copy of the plus comments and the applicant's response, copies of a wetlands determination, a letter regarding threatened and endangered species, a copy of a nutrient reduction report, a copy of a Phase 1 environmental assessment report, and a copy of the proposed master plan, including this site and the existing Bay Forest Club. The applicant submitted an executive summary into the record. Commission heard comments from DLDOT, Sussex County Engineering Department. The applicants were present with representatives. They gave a presentation and responded to questions raised by the commission. Each of you received that report in your packet. There were no parties present in support of or in opposition to the application. On January 23rd, there was a motion and a second to defer action for further consideration. On February 13th, 2014, the commission discussed this application under old business. Mr. Smith stated that he would move that the commission recommend approval of changes in zone 1741 for Bay Forest Club LLC from an AR1 agricultural residential to a MRRPC based upon the record made during the public hearing for the following reasons. One, MR zoning is appropriate for the site because medium density development is appropriate in areas where central water and sewer are available. In this case, sewer service will be provided as part of a county-operated sanitary sewer district, and adequate wastewater capacity is available for the project. Central water service will be provided by Tidewater Utilities, Inc. Two, the proposed MRRPC project meets the purpose of the zoning ordinance and that it promotes the orderly growth of the county because this proposed project is in a developing area as established by the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan. Three, the application is an extension of the existing Bay Forest RPC development, which was filed under changes in 1526 that is currently underway. It covers an area of land that is adjacent to and nearly surrounded by the existing development. It will be incorporated into that existing development. Four, adding this tract of land to the existing RPC will allow for an improved design of the overall development plan, including the layout of lots, homes and open spaces, community areas, and roadways. Five, the project is in an area that already has similar development, and this development is consistent with other uses in the area, including Bay Colony, Seagrass RPC, Denton Woods, Denton Manor, Banks Acres, Banksville Park, Mill Run, Waits Creek Manor, West Ocean Farms, Blackwater Village, and Blackwater Cove. There are also B1 and C1 properties in close proximity. Six, with the conditions that are placed upon this project, the RPC designation is appropriate for this parcel of land, and that the purpose of the RPC is to encourage large-scale development as a means to create superior living environments and the use of design ingenuity while protecting existing and future uses. And seven, this recommendation for a change of zone is subject to the following conditions. A, that the conditions imposed by ordinance number 1670 for changes in 1526 shall apply to this application, with the exception of the so noted total number of units. The property that is the subject of this application shall be integrated into the overall development scheme of the Bay Forest project, and as a result, those conditions shall apply equally to this tract as part of the overall development. Excuse me. B, the number of units associated with this application shall be 84. As a result of this application, the total maximum number of units for the entire Bay Forest Club project shall be 892 units, so designated as follows. There will be 151 85-foot single-family lots, 14 75-foot single-family lots, 216 70-foot single-family lots, 7 65-foot single-family lots, 93 28-foot by 42-foot cottages, 109 34-foot villas, and 302 30-foot attached and detached villas. That represents a total of 892 units. D, any wetlands on the area shall be marked appropriately by carcinate markers for the information of residents and the homeowners association. E, before proceeding with any construction involving the land that is the subject of this application, the applicant shall submit a revised master plan combining under both changes in 1526 and 1741, integrating this land into the entire Bay Forest development. There was a motion and a second, and that motion carried unanimously to forward this application to the county council with the recommendation it be approved. That vote carried 4-0. Mr. Johnson, he was absent. Just for your information, changes in 1526 was approved on March 23rd of 2004 with 21 conditions.
And it expired, is that the case?
No, it's under construction.
Right.
This is an infill project.
Okay, I understand.
So based on the commission's recommendation, these 21 conditions of approval would mm-hmm. be with this application. Mm-hmm. The only thing changing would be the total number of units.
And if we have freshwater wetlands, I don't think we have a buffer requirement, do we?
The county does not have a
right.
buffer from tidal wetlands, but
right.
we do state.
From tidal either?
Or from tidal we do. State or federal we don't.
Wait a minute. Freshwater we don't?
Correct.
Right. Mm-hmm.
State tidal wetlands we have a 50-foot setback.
Yes, okay.
Any other questions from
yeah, there
council?
Is, there, is, there isn't many freshwater wetlands on this, right? Less than 2 acres or something like that?
There were small areas. They've been delineated.
Right. Well, explain cottages. What's this? There's 93 28-foot by 42-foot cottages. Is that just the size of the structure?
The size
or is it
the
size of the land?
The units, I believe.
Units.
Yes.
And they're just, what, on a condo type of a land?
Under yes.
The, yeah, okay.
Going back to the wetlands, or one of the conditions of approval was state wetlands should not be included on any individual lots. Federal and state wetlands shall be maintained as non-disturbance areas except where authorized by a federal or state permit. So there was no disturbance to the mm-hmm. wetlands except for a bridge crossing.
Right, but you can build right up to the yes. freshwater.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So there's no protection about yeah. against runoff, really.
Russell Banks,
any other questions from council? Seeing none,
is this near Russell Banks' borrow pit, or is this another piece
It's in the
half
area. It's in the area, yes.
Half a mile.
Not adjacent to it or anything.
Okay.
Seeing no other questions, Mr. Fuquay?
Good afternoon, Mrs. Stever, gentlemen. For the record, my name is Jim Fuquay. I represent the applicant, Bay Forest Club, LLC. With me is Tom Natelli, who's a principal of Bay Forest Club, LLC, and Ken Usab from Morris Ritchie & Associates. Our presentation is going to consist of me just doing some introductory comments and some of the, a little bit of background about the project. Ken will review the site plan with you. Tom has some comments he wants to make about his goal of incorporating this in. It should be fairly quick. I can summarize it easily by saying there is an existing approved RPC, which was 808 units. It's well under construction. It's about 50% built. Mm-hmm. And this is to bring 30 more acres into that development mm-hmm. and construct an additional 84 units that will be part of that development, subject to the same covenants. And those, the buyers will have the right to use all the facilities and will pay all the fees and dues just as the existing people.
This property would have different conditions.
No.
They're all the same?
What we're proposing is that it will be subject to the 21 conditions that already exist on the existing
right.
RPC, subject to an amendment to get to condition number one, mm-hmm. which obviously increases the number of units
right.
to bring
right.
in these. And,
but
all the other
same.
Conditions remain the same.
Everything's the same.
So as I said, this this application is to amend conditional use number 1526, Bay Forest Club. That is an existing MRRPC. It was approved with a density of 808 residential units. And again, what we're proposing to do is to incorporate an additional 30.695 acres into that existing RPC. And for this new piece, rezone that MRRPC, which is the application before you. The land is located on the east side of White's Neck Road, that's County Road 347, just north of Millville. The land, to a very large extent, is surrounded by the existing RPC, and the majority of the land actually, I think you'll be familiar with this, was what was formerly Jim's Hideaway, which was an older, RV camper park. So that's basically what this land was used for. And then there was some additional land that was not part of that. The land actually consists of three separate tax map parcels. And as I said, Jim's Hideaway was the main piece. Jim's Hideaway actually had 188 campsites, and there were miscellaneous sheds. There was an office, there was a storage building, a bathhouse, a swimming pool, and some other outbuildings. And Jim's Hideaway was on on-site septic, which, of course, this won't be. This will be on county sewer, what we're proposing. So the intent is to include this additional land as part of the Bay Forest Club RPC to construct 84 additional residential units. As I said, the slide here shows the area basically we're talking about, the 30 acres running from the road back into the Jim's Hideaway area. As I said, it's surrounded by the existing development, so it really is what we generally refer to as an infill parcel as far as this development's concerned. As Mr. Abbott stated, Bay Forest Club was approved as an MRRPC by the Sussex County Council back in March of 2004. It contained 385 acres. It was approved subject to 21 conditions, one of which limited the number of units to 808. And basically, if you ride down there, you'll find it's a very attractive community. It's been very successful, and it's about 50% built out at this time. With the inclusion of the additional 30 acres, it is intended that all of the current conditions would remain the same and would apply to this additional 30-acre parcel, as I said, with the exception of the condition number one, which would be increased from 808 units to 892 units, which would be the increase of the 84 units that that I mentioned. As to the application before you, the applicant did attend the PLUS meeting back in December of 2012. PLUS comments were issued in January of 2013. Ken Usab did respond to the PLUS comments by letter dated October 29, 2013. And all of these things I mentioned are in the record. The applicant also undertook a number of studies and obtained several approvals from different agencies in connection with this application. There was a Phase 1 environmental site assessment prepared by Geotechnology Associates, Inc. There was a nutrient reduction stormwater management report prepared by Morris Ritchie and Associates. An environmental assessment and public facilities evaluation report was prepared by Morris Ritchie. That is required for the site because it's located in the environmentally sensitive development overlay zone of the county comprehensive plan. There is a letter from the Fish and Wildlife Service of the U.S. Department of the Interior confirming that no federally listed endangered or threatened species exist in the development impact area. There's a letter for the approving the wetland delineation from the Army Corps of Engineers. And there is a letter of no objection for the White's Neck Road entrance design from DelDOT. Also, as I think Mr. Abbott stated, there is an executive summary of the application that was prepared by Morris Ritchie, which is part of the materials you were given. As to the specifics of our application, the land is located in a level 3 area under the state strategies map, and it's in the environmentally sensitive developing area under the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan. As you know, the environmentally sensitive developing area is a designated growth area under the Comprehensive Plan, and it is an area where growth is anticipated and is planned to occur. The site, as the existing RPC already has, will be served by Central Water, supplied by Tidewater Utilities Water Company. Tidewater, as I said, already provides water to the existing Bay Forest Club RPC. Tidewater planned for additional water service in this area in the design of the original development, and there is a water tower in Bay Forest, which actually is located pretty much adjacent to this site. Back when the original development was done, the developer completed a sewer concept plan which included these infill parcels in that study. That study was approved by the County Engineering Department, and approximately 120 EDUs were planned for these infill lands. And as I stated, we're actually proposing 84 units, so it's less than what was planned. And there are comments from the County Engineering Department confirming that the proposed development is within the planning study assumptions, and adequate capacity does exist. The existing sewer pump station that was constructed by the developer will also serve these infill parcels. And again, that was designed, permitted, and constructed with adequate capacity to serve this, these additional lands. DelDOT has issued a letter of no objection as to the proposed development of the infill parcels and the proposed entrance. And Bay Forest Club LLC has an existing agreement with DelDOT as part of the original RPC as to any off-site road improvements that DelDOT may require. The new homes to be constructed on this infill parcel will be provided utility services and emergency services by the providers currently serving Bay Forest Club. And as I said, the future owners of these homes will be members of the Bay Forest Club Homeowners Association. They will have full access to all community recreational amenities. They will be subject to the restrictions and covenants of the development, and they will pay assessments the same as existing
I need help.
Residents.
I can't find the... Jim, could you help me with this computer?
You're asking the wrong person, I think.
Sorry, but no, I can't get to the report. I can't get to the report. This one, I can't get rid of that off my screen.
The executive summary?
Sorry.
Hope she didn't interrupt your...
I know, it was so good. I'm sorry about
your
that.
Your spiel, your...
But I want to see.
Your rhythm, you know, what you get in a certain mood.
Yes.
Do you have to go back and start like all over again?
Yeah.
Lost your spot.
I suspect I should.
I have now forgotten everything you just said.
Oh, no.
I'll be back in 15 minutes. I'd listen.
And with that, I will turn our presentation over to Ken.
Thank you.
She's...
Uh-huh. Thank you very much.
Technically challenged.
Thank you. So are you. Mm-hmm.
For the record, my name is Kenneth Yusuf. I'm a professional engineer in principle with the firm Morris and Ritchie Associates. We've been, since the project inception, working on the planning and engineering and design of this project. I have an aerial photograph, which I'll use to orient you to the property. The area outlined in red is the existing boundary of the Bay Forest Club RPC as it prior to this approval. You can see over to the left-hand side of the page, that's White's Neck Road. This is Old Mill Road. We have the Bethany Bay subdivision over here where there's a gap in the property lines. We have the headwaters of Collins Creek, which is just off of Indian River Bay. North would be to the top of the page. What you'll also see are some of the existing phases that have already been constructed in the Bay Forest Club project. Generally in this area is what we refer to as phase one. We have the main entrance off of White's Neck Road in this location. We have a large community center that has already been constructed here. Various phases of residential development. We also have phase 2.1 and 2.2, with which the utility and the road infrastructure has already been constructed. This photograph is a little bit dated, and there are quite a few homes that are already located in that area and constructed at the present time.
Does it appear that a lot of those homes would be full-time residents from the size of the...
Yes.
You think so? What percentage would you think?
50. Approximately 50%.
Okay, thank you.
The area that's subject to the application today are the infill parcels right here. This area, which is completely surrounded by the Bay Forest Club project. More specifically, we have the Jim's Hideaway Campground here, which comes out to White's Neck Road. There's an existing single-family home, manager's residence. There are quite a number of facilities, a pool, and other amenity buildings within the campground. And then the campground itself, which is generally in this area, this is a tract of undisturbed forest, which is on one of the parcels. The Mitchell parcel is out along White's Neck Road right here, and you can see the existing phase 3 and 4 of the Bay Forest Club project, which kind of wrap around the project. Also, just towards the bottom of the page is the existing community center and bridge that's part of phase 1 of the project. And it's a little bit off the page here, but there's a water tower over in the very lower left-hand corner here that is operated by Tidewater Utilities. Here's a copy of the previously approved RPC. Again, just to orient you, the paper's turned a little bit. The infill parcels are right here and here. Here's phases 3 and 4 of the original RPC plan. I've gone ahead and highlighted them here to have them stand out a little bit. In 2010, there was an amendment to phase 2 of Bay Forest Club that revised the configuration of some of the residential units down here. We moved some townhomes from phases 3 and 4 over to phase 2.2, reconfigured the road network to provide better interconnectivity. A little traffic circle here, and at that time, a bridge was approved across Collins Creek to the future phases, which I'll come back to in a moment, again, to further interconnectivity inside the project. Here's a little bit of an enlargement that shows that. We have a mixture, again, of the single-family homes, the villa townhomes here and here, and the cottage product that there was a discussion about earlier, with a future road connection anticipated over to phases 3 and 4. The next image that we have before you is kind of an overall showing the infill areas, again, highlighted in red. I'll come back to that in a moment, on how we're proposing to integrate this infill area in the overall project. The first thing that we did is you'll see on the earlier phase one part of the project an entrance boulevard that comes all the way down to the community center. You'll notice that on the entry boulevard and the entry sequence coming through the project, we have a number of amenities, including large pond features, open space areas, multimodal paths that come down, and there are no units fronting directly on that entrance boulevard as you come into the project. We were able to continue that through the project into phase 2. This is phase 2.1 and 2.2 down here, and extend that across with a bridge connection over to the future phases of development and a newly proposed community center that will be constructed as a result of adding these additional properties into the project. The next slide shows, instead of the original project entrance, which again came in off of White's Neck Road here and came around the existing forested area down to the bridge, what we've done is we're providing a straight boulevard into the future community center, again, that unlike the originally approved plan, will have no residential units fronting on the road. And again, it provides a very desirable, aesthetically appealing entrance in to the project. We also have another key spine or access down to the existing marina feature here. There's a small community marina in the lower right-hand corner of the page. And emergency access will be maintained. There's an existing right-of-way up here in the upper right-hand corner that will also provides access to the existing infill project property that was not part of the most recent acquisition. You'll also see, and you may recall, This is the Bywood Manor subdivision that was kind of integrated into the design. It was not formally part of the Bay Forest RPC, but was integrated in and is part of the HOA, as well as another emergency access out onto Old Mill Road right here that's highlighted in yellow.
But as far as, you know, entrance, you can count on being there. It's only one.
No, we have...
Other than the emergencies, what you're saying.
No, we'll have...
Okay.
We have the existing entrance here,
mm-hmm.
and then we have a second entrance in this location, which was constructed already.
That was emergency.
No, the emergency...
That's something that will be used.
The emergency would be the yellow one
okay,
here.
Okay, okay. So that will be used. Okay,
I got So you. The main entrance will be right here.
Right.
And again, I'll come back to that in a moment.
Thank you.
So what this has done, again, is we provided this central connection all the way through the project from White's Neck Road to the community centers, all the way through the heart of the community that basically ties all the different areas of the community together to the central community center facilities here and here. What I did not mention before, there's an existing pedestrian bridge right here and another pedestrian right here to foster a really walking community, an area that along with multimodal paths, which I'll get to in a minute. We have a series of pedestrian connections throughout the community and along White's Neck Road, tying all the different areas of the community and providing access to all the residents. This is an enlargement showing, again, I'll just orient you, White's Neck Road over on the left-hand side. These homes here and this area is the existing Bay Forest RPC. And we have the infill parcels right here, this being Jim's Hideaway, and the second parcel of Jim's Hideaway there, and the Mitchell parcel. So again, you can see the main boulevard entrance that will be coming down to the future community center right here. And in the next photo, or image, we're plugging in the new residential development. Mm-hmm. You can see the boulevard coming down through here. We've divided it. We've tried to retain the existing trees as much as possible and enhance the entry sequence similar to what you found in the existing entrance to Bay Forest with a large pond. Cottages that have two fronts. So basically you have a front that's fronting on the road, but a front that's also with porch elements along the pond there.
So you're going to maintain some forest there? Is that my understanding?
Yes.
So is there something in writing that says you're going to leave that area forested?
The site plan calls for it to be maintained. And I'll actually, on the RPC plan, there are a number of elements that I think may address some of your questions.
Okay. And I'm sure those folks, now that you're going to develop that, it was all forest at one time. I'm sure they're not going to be too happy about that. So they're losing a lot of, forest. So, okay.
This is the an excerpt from the RPC plan that was submitted for the project. As Jim mentioned, there's 84 total units, of which 70 are townhome and villa units, which are located generally in this area. We also have 770 by 120-foot single-family lots up here and generally over around phase 3.1, which was recently... A preliminary plan was approved by the Planning Commission, as well as two cottages, one here and one over here, that are integrated into the plan. One of the key elements of the project in terms of trying to maintain environmental sensitivity was if you look at the plans enclosed with the package, there's an existing stream, non-tidal stream, which runs down along the property line along the bottom of the page here. And then the stream changes into the headwaters of Collins Creek and a tidal wetland area here. What we've done with the design is we've pushed the residential units and the private ownership of the lots away from the more sensitive wetland areas and focused our stormwater management features and our open space passive and active recreation amenities along the wetland area. Another key element, if you look at the original aerial photography that was in your package, you'll notice that The existing property owner had essentially cleared the entire non-tidal wetland buffer along the entrance to Jim's Hideaway in this location. We're actually proposing to do 0.63 acres of afforestation in that area, which will essentially establish, and the other thing you'll note is the existing campground space is backed right up to a slope that went off into the headwaters of Collins Creek. We pushed the residential units back and are maintaining a green open space, and we'll be restoring a non-tidal buffer and a tidal buffer along the entire frontage of this section of the project.
What kind of activities did you say that they're planning to allow in the wetland area? I didn't quite get all of that you...
There's no activity proposed in the wetlands
area.
Themselves.
I thought you said that there is something proposed.
Excuse me.
Not our choice, no way.
This kind of shows it a little bit more. In the open space areas here, the non-tidal wetland essentially follows the red line right here. In the open space areas, again, we've got afforestation that would be put in this location. Let me go back to the previous slide. It's highlighted on the plan, crosshatched right there. We have a shared pathway, a 10-foot or 8 to 10-foot wide community pathway system that'll go through that area as part of the trail network.
We'll go through
yes.
that area.
Not through the wetland, mm-hmm. but through the buffer area, mm-hmm. and it would be enhanced on either side.
Now, wetland, we don't have enough to deal with wetlands. I mean, that's up to the state or, mm-hmm. or to the federal government. But have you already done that? Have you took care of that?
We've already had the jurisdictional determination updated, which is where we've confirmed where the wetlands are, and there are no regulated impacts proposed as part of this work.
Them, you know, we don't have nothing to say about it anyway, so go
okay.
ahead.
Okay. The water supply for the site, again, like I said, is it's served by Tidewater Utilities. We have an existing water tower that in this location in the lower left-hand corner. There are water mains existing along the front of White's Neck Road that will be looped throughout the site. The sewer service, it's part of the Holtz Landing Millville planning area. The original Bay Forest Club sewer concept plan that was approved by the county, as Mr. Fuqua said, was included this area as a designated service area. The pump station for the project, which is located approximately right here, it was sized and constructed to serve the project. With regard to the existing campground, again, we're taking the 188 units that are on well and septic, along with all the other support facilities that all be connected to the public sewer system. And based on the county engineers and DENREC documentation, that alone could result in approximately a 90% reduction of nutrient loading from the property. So it's a...
So that's part of the plan you're presenting, then? That's something that's we can definitely count on?
It's required to be part, and we're connecting it to the public
zone.
Sewer system.
Yeah, in that zone. Okay, fine. That's good. Fine.
The stormwater management plan has incorporated a variety of low-impact development, bioretention, shallow water wetlands that are sprinkled through the project in a more decentralized type of plan that is consistent with the goals of the good water quality enhancement and stormwater management. And as I said before, we're going to comply with the nutrient reduction requirements for the Indian River Bays, both in terms of the stormwater management and in terms of the wastewater system. This is an excerpt from the phase 3.1 preliminary plan, just for your information, that was approved by the Planning Commission, again showing the entrance off of White's Neck Road. These areas were cross-hatched and shown as future development areas because the rezoning had not been formally approved at that time. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Tom Natelli.
Natelli Homes? Well, that's nice to meet you.
Thank you. Let me try to get this to the right spot here. What's forward? Am I going forward or am I going backwards? Going backwards. Give me. Appreciate your patience. I'll be quicker than this. Thank you. For the record, Tom Natelli. I'm the CEO of Natelli Communities, and we're, as many of you know, we're developing Bay Forest, and appreciate being here before you today. This is a view of the property from the Indian River Bay, and I wanted to show it to you because it's a, as many of you know, spectacular part of the county. It's got the Collins Creek tributary running up into it, which is a beautiful environmental feature that we're trying to preserve. There's some, you know, forested lands on it, and we're, you know, we have an opportunity to do something very special there, which we've been working on actually now for the last decade with the county and the community. But as Ken pointed out, you know, when we inherited this plan, these intervening parcels had not been incorporated into the ultimate design of the community. And so when you look at the original plans that were approved, this entrance to this part of the community, phases 3 and 4, was somewhat of a compromise. It was basically felt like a back door, and, you know, was forced up to this edge of the community. And there, the organization of what was going on in phases 3 and 4 really wasn't up to the same standard as what is happening in phases 1 and 2. So as we got involved, we started to study what, you know, what would happen if we could acquire these intervening parcels. And that's the last time I'll go backwards, I promise you. And, you know, what this is enabling us to do, as Ken has pointed out, I won't be too redundant, but by acquiring these parcels, we could start to look again at how do we preserve this environmental edge, where are there forested areas we can preserve, how do we get a strong connection through and integrate the community from one side of Collins Creek to the other. How do we start developing organizing features in each of the sub-neighborhoods in a balanced way to turn this into something that, you know, it fits with the rest of what Bay Forest is. And I did go backwards again. Ken has reviewed many aspects of this plan. You know, we now have a really strong connection through the community. We've organized this second pool facility, so it's right across from our existing pool facility, which will help with load balancing in the summertime when you've got those real high, you know, the 4th of July and everybody's wanting to be at the facility. You'll be able to get back and forth easily from one to the other. We've recreated how this community addresses the rest of the surrounding neighborhoods with a, you know, a lake at the entrance with appropriate berming where we don't have homes fronting White's Neck, and then getting the right kinds of feel from the fronts of units along White's Neck where they do address it. When you come down this road, we'll bifurcate this road and start to open it up into a tree preservation areas with uplighting, and then further open it up and terminate it on a new clubhouse. So we feel very good about the combination of these things. This first phase, just to give you some idea of, you know, how we're approaching this, this is someone, I think, Mr. Cole, you might have asked, what are the 28 by 42 foot units? This is an example of that here on a neighborhood green. And to give you a feel for how we're going to approach, you know, these things, this is our existing entrance, and this is the same kind of feel we're creating for the new entrance now with the lake and these types of units fronting them. This is the kind of concept that we're going after for the 28-foot product, which are actually, these will be single-family detached units with a community use terminating the neighborhood green. In the case of the first one, we're actually developing an herb garden with raised potting beds that the Community Garden Club will use and maintain at the end of that green. And just to give you some sense of this, so we'll be, you know, the green is out here, the fronts of the units are here with front porches, and we're creating this layering effect so that when you're sitting on your front porch, you feel a sense of privacy, but you still have the benefit of you know, being open to the greens that you're sharing with your neighbors. Here's some of the approaches we'll be taking in some of the other sub-neighborhoods of the community with that same kind of product to give you a sense of how that will feel. So I'll just click through this. for the sake of brevity of time. We have kept the community fully informed. We've had the plans that we're showing you in the clubhouse for the last 18 months.
So they knew that forest was coming down.
The community is completely apprised of what we're doing. We are completely interactive with the community, and we've explained to them along the way what our goals are, why we're acquiring these pieces, how we will incorporate them into the community, and solicited feedback from them on the way. And in fact, the feedback we've gotten from them has in part informed some of the things that we are doing here. So,
Gaithersburg, you're the company that had the Gaithersburg project?
Yeah, the Lakelands project.
We went on the bus ride to look at that. Okay, fine.
Yep. That's dating both you and me, though. That's probably 10, 12 years ago, I think. I can stop here. I think that, you know, the net of this is I just want to share, we really do take what we do very seriously. We're a privately owned, family-run company, and we do recognize that working with you, with Shane, Lawrence, everybody, that, you know, what we're creating here is going to be the fabric of part of Sussex County for the next 7,500 years or more. And we do have an opportunity to do this well together. And, you know, in our view, we have a responsibility to do it well together. And that's what we're trying to do here. We think incorporating these pieces makes sense for this region of the county, and I hope, to have your support for it. There's one condition I just want to make a comment on. There's a condition that is there a slide for it? Well, let me... You find the slide. There's a condition that's asking us to mark the wetlands areas with a product, which is basically a standing plastic product that would designate where the wetlands are to keep people out. And we're happy to work with the county and provide the designation. What we're going to suggest is to give us the freedom to use signage that would be more appropriate to the theming of the community. So we'll create a signage program and we'll go ahead and mark it with signage. So the only request really is to give us the flexibility on what type of signage we use there. But other than that, we're in agreement with all the conditions and appreciate your support.
Did you have any problem with very low lying? There's a lot of water there. Yeah, is it the level of the land? Has it been
most
a problem?
Most of where we are is, you mean that whole area?
Overall. Mm-hmm.
Most of where we are is at elevation 7 or 8, but, you know, out by the marina, we are doing some filling now, mm-hmm. which is, you know, that's down that elevation, 4 or 5.
Okay.
But most of it is surprisingly higher than
higher.
It feels, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and summing up, just I want to just mention a couple of points. But Tom mentioned about the signs. There are things you see at some places, but they're a little bit institutional looking. So what they prefer doing is something like you see on a golf course or something, where you basically say they're fragile environmental areas here, you know, please do not disturb, things of that nature. And to accomplish that, in the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation of the conditions, I think you could just remove the word Carsonite. I had to look that up on the internet to see what, I didn't know what Carsonite was, but it apparently it's a name brand. So that condition would read, any wetlands on the area shall be marked appropriately by markers for the information of residents and the homeowners. And just delete Carsonite would be our request. And I also just wanted to mention to you that you are going to see us again sometime probably later this year. There's a slight adjustment in the number of units, not for this piece, but for the overall development, because with the incorporation of this piece, it frees up some buffer areas, and we're well under the EDU allotment for this. So I just want to throw that out so when we come back, you won't say, well, what are you doing back here, Susan?
Yeah.
In summary, I think everything's pretty clear. This is an application to incorporate the 30 additional acres into the existing RPC and to construct 84 additional units. Our request for the MRRPC designation is the same designation that was approved for the existing RPC. And as I said, it really represents a incorporation of the infill parcel into the development. Back in 2004, when the Planning and Zoning Commission and the County Council found that this area was appropriate for a well-designed, large-scale residential development served by county sewer and public water, And that was the basis for that decision. And I think that equally is applicable to this application. It's basically the same thing. Unfortunately, that property couldn't be purchased back at that time. In this situation, the developer has a proven track record, having completed 50% approximately of this very development, and the additional 30 acres, I think, as Mr. Natelli has shown, will be incorporated into development and actually will be an improvement for the overall design of the entire RPC. The only, again, the only condition we're really changing is increasing the total number of units permitted, and that's included in the planning and zoning recommendation. So at the planning and zoning recommendation last Thursday, the commission did unanimously recommend approval of the application subject to the conditions. For the reasons that we've stated and for the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation, we would request the council approval of this subject to the Planning and Zoning Commission's conditions, but perhaps deleting the word carbon. Carcinite.
What was that about?
It's purely the commission just wanted the people, anyone, not the people who live there or anyone,
no,
to be aware of where the wetlands are.
Okay.
That's all. So
all right.
I think carcinite just kind of became a term that is referred to, but I think we
but
can do something.
But you do agree to
we can do, yeah, we have no problem with marking it. We just think we can
posting
do it a little more attractively than
appropriate sign.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that will conclude everything we have unless you have any questions.
What is now the total acreage of?
The total acreage?
Of everything, all combined?
The we're adding 30.6 acres, and the original development was
approximately 415.
The original development was 385. So.
Any other questions from council? If not, is there anyone else here today that would like to speak in favor of this application? Anyone else here in favor of this application? Seeing none, is there anyone here today that would like to oppose this application? Is there anyone here in opposition to this application? Seeing none, Mr. President, we can close the public hearing on this matter and close the public record.
Yeah.
And I could read the short title if
yeah
you so desire.
Of course, I'll
close
concerned
public hearing. And let's
do we have to vote on the change?
Yes, that
yes
we would.
Close public comment also.
Yes.
That's correct.
That's okay with council.
Okay.
Ask Mr. Moore to read the short title.
And before I read the short title, what if there's desire from council, we could amend condition 7D that was given by planning and zoning by deleting the word carcinite and removing the quotation marks around carcinite markers.
I'll make that motion.
That leaves us with, we don't need that word.
That would just be markers.
Yes, markers.
All right, you need to read the short title first. Then
yeah
Mr. Cole wants to make a motion to do an amendment
yes
to it, then we'll do that.
Yes.
Okay.
An ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for a storage facility to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, containing 116.327 acres, more or less, tax map ID 134-15-118, part of. That was the short title, and now we'll need to make the motion to.
You would just back up and verify yes what you read was the correct short title.
Did you say storage area?
Is it?
It's not a storage area. This is CZ 1741.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I was looking at the to be introduced.
He was using his bad eye.
That's exactly right. And application of Bay Forest Club LLC to amend comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agricultural residential district to a MRRPC medium density residential district residential plan community for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, containing 30.695 acres, more or less, land lying east of White's Neck Road, Road 347, half mile north of Old Mill Road, Road 349, tax map ID 1-134-817-1702-18. Mm-hmm. Does that one sound better?
That sounds
yes
better.
Better.
One if I was right here or not, that's okay. Okay. Okay, having heard that, Mr. Cole, you wanted to make a motion for an amendment?
I think it'd be appropriate that we modify in the conditions 7D to reflect the wording that the attorney had cited moments ago about removing the word carcinite and the quotation marks.
Is that your motion?
Second.
Mr. Cole, motion is to amend the 7D to strike the word carcinite and take the quotation marks around markers. So simply read marked appropriately by markers.
That's good.
And that's up to the developer how to do that. Mm-hmm. That's a motion, Mr. Cole, to have a second. Second, Mr. Wilson. Any questions on that? Take the vote on that, Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
I'm wondering about this. Do we have any say at all over this wetlands?
I mean, wetlands. We
that's what I'm saying. I don't know why we're involved in this thing. But I'll second it.
Okay.
I'll
vote yes. Motion carried. Now then.
Yes.
Entertain a motion.
Yes, with the findings from P&Z, items 1 through 7, with the conditions as amended, A through E, on page 4 of the presentation, and as read by Mr. Abbott into the record.
I'll make a motion.
Motion, Mr. Cole.
Second.
Second, Mr. Wilson, to approve conditional zone, or change the zone 1741 with the conditions and as amended. Any questions on that motion?
Well, our position, of course, is assuming that we have the adequate infrastructure to support it. But it's not really that's not really our question at this point. But go ahead.
We'll take the vote on the motion. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes, yes. Planning and Zoning, I think, did a thorough job. I have seen this company's work, and I was very impressed. It was beautiful. Neat, and I've seen things that were presented, the ideas that were presented, I've seen them happen in Gaithersburg, and I vote yes.
Mr. Cole?
I'll vote yes with the conditions. It's, as they stated, I think as the attorney stated, it's one of the more popular and more successful subdivisions in the area, and the reason is probably because of the location and the way they've been able to proceed with the development, so I'll vote yes.
Phillips.
I'll vote yes. It was turned into which in a sense it is. Planning and Zoning has done a good job with its conditions, and I think it will be a continuation of a quality development.
Mr. Wilson.
I vote yes on recommendations of Planning and Zoning.
I also agree with Planning and Zoning's recommendation, and I do think that it would be an infill for the area. What's there so far has been done very well, I think, and I think they are committed to doing a good job in this county.
Yep.
I will vote yes. Motion carried.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll now go back on our agenda to old business conditional use.